Hello, everybody.
Hello,
hey.
Phil.
Hello.
What's up, Phil?
Hello.
Hey, I just got to tell you a brief part of my day yesterday that has very little of what we're going to talk about, but I just have to tell you. About 2 weeks ago, water started dripping in a doorway on the first floor of my home, what I have set up as my office. So water was dripping from the door frame. I put a bucket under there, and overnight it accumulated about an inch and a half of water. And, you know, having had experience with mold, the last thing I want is water inside my walls. So I called a guy I know who's a mold remediation expert. He opened up the wall, and he said, Phil, I don't know where this leak is coming from. Now, directly upstairs is the master bathroom. So he said, it could be the shower, could be the toilet. Let's try to figure it out. So he's up there, and he's running water, and he's trying to figure it out. And he goes, you know what? You better get a leak detection expert. I didn't know there was such a thing. So I call a leak detection company, and this guy comes out, and he's got all this equipment, like little stuff and briefcases, and he's using something called a sonic ping, and he's putting nitrous in there, and he's going to trace where it goes. I mean, I was really impressed. But after all is done, $450 later, he says, you don't have a leak. I said, okay, I appreciate that you're an expert and you have really nice equipment. But I'm standing here, and I'm watching water drip. It hasn't rained. Nobody is standing inside between the ceiling and the floor. No little guy is in there with a hose. So do you acknowledge there's water coming down? Yes. So doesn't that mean there's a leak? No, you don't have a leak. And at this point, I just started kind of getting a little edgy. So by yesterday, I was really upset, and I said, no matter what, I'm going to get this resolved today. So I just got on the phone, and I started calling all these different people, and this one company, Service America, who I actually have a service contract with, said they'd get a plumber out today. So the plumber shows up, and he says it is the wax ring in the toilet. I said, can you fix it? He said, yes. I said, okay, great, fix it. He goes, well, I don't have a wax ring. I have to order the part. I said, I need this fixed because there's water dripping through my ceiling. Nobody seems to understand. This is after 7 or 8 people had been here. I said, are you sure the wax ring is the solution? He says, yes. I said, okay, stay here. I'm going to Home Depot, and I'm going to get a wax ring. I said, is it a standard size? He goes, yes. I said, you stay here. You tell your company you're busy working because you get paid by the hour. I'm going to go get the wax ring. So I go down to Home Depot, I get a wax ring, but not only that, I talk to the guy there and I go, I want everything it could possibly be. So I leave Home Depot, $148, I'm buying a flange. The guy goes, you need a plastic or a metal? I go, give me both. So I got like this big bag of toilet, I could build my own toilet if I want to now. And I come home and now I got everything, and the guy's trying to lift the toilet, he takes the bolts off and he goes, dude, whoever built this house cemented the toilet down. I go, cemented it down? He goes, yeah, this is nice marble, and the only way they can get it to stand marble is they cement it. I can't lift the toilet. I go, you got to be kidding me. You make a living fixing toilets. You can't lift the toilet? He goes, no, you need a jackhammer. I said, a jackhammer to fix a toilet with like a $3 part? So I'm getting really upset, and I said, you know what? Just leave. Seriously, just leave. And I go to Angie's List, and I'm going down a list calling every like A-rated plumber. And I talked to one guy, and he lives in Boynton Beach near me, and I said, listen, can you just come over here now? He goes, you're really lucky. I'm going to a doctor's appointment in Boynton Beach. I could be there in 5 minutes, literally. So he comes over, and he's so professional, and he said, this is not cemented. This is caulked. He goes, of course you could lift the toilet up. I said, great. He says, but I can't do anything until I give you an estimate and you sign it. Fine. So he's walking around, you know, writing an estimate, professional. The other guy comes back with a hammer and a chisel, like a little, like a sledgehammer, you know, a little one, and a chisel. And he goes, yeah, bro, he keeps calling me bro. He goes, bro, I'm here to fix it. I go, it's all right, I got another plumber here. Well, as we're talking, the other plumber comes down the steps with his clipboard ready to hand me the estimate. And the Service America guy goes, you got this guy? He's going to rip you off. And the other guy's standing, going, why would I rip him off? Like, he didn't know who he was. He goes, I know your company. I saw your truck outside. He's going to charge you $3,000. And the guy goes, I got the estimate in my hand. It's $185. He goes, no, he's going to trick you. He's going to try to sell you other parts. And now the professional plumber's getting a little agitated. He puts the clipboard down, and he kind of puffs out his chest, and these guys are about to go at it on my steps in my house. So I get between them, and I push the more normal guy outside because the other guy was kind of nuts. I push him outside. I go, listen, I don't. This is the dumbest thing that could happen is you guys are going to literally fight inside my house. I said, listen, go away. I'm going to have you come back, but let me deal with this guy right now. He started working on it. So anyway, he rips the toilet up with his hammer and his chisel. He gets it up, and he actually does the repair, fixes everything, and leaves my house. And right now, it has stopped leaking. So I got a drywall guy coming over now. He might get here during the call to close up the ceiling so they could be done with this thing. So that has been the latest part of my week. But what strikes me in every field is the difference between people who get the job done and people who are willing to give you the shrug. And I'm sitting here thinking about it. I'm going, I paid a leak detection expert. This is what they do. You would think if he can't find a leak and there's water coming, he'd either go, I can't find it, I'm not going to charge you. Right? I mean, if his job is to find the leak and he doesn't find the leak and there's a leak, why is he charging me? Does it make sense to any of you? And the same with the plumber. Like, he's willing to go, dude, you can't get the toilet up. You can't get the toilet up. There's a leak. You got to fix the leak. So I become very cognizant of it when things like this happen, of how people are willing to go to work, not do what they're supposed to do, and take money. And when I look at it on a larger scale, it's what I feel about the medical field with my own experience several years ago, going from doctor to doctor to doctor. None of them hesitated to charge me, but it's the same shrug as the leak detection guy. It's, well, I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I don't know why. But, you know, stop by the desk and talk to the girl, which means pay your money. And I really believe in every industry there is that. But I also believe there are the outliers. And I think the outliers are the ones who are focused on getting the job done. I would hope that would be the rule and not the exception, but my experience is it's the exception. It's rare. And we can talk about anything. I could talk about cable companies. I'm sure you guys will have stories. You know, I could talk about the mobile phone companies. You guys will have stories. Because we live in a society now where people are just willing to do something in exchange for money, whether or not they get the result. Now, we are looking at a population who has the greatest health need ever, and personal trainers are capable, if I'm going to be very conservative here, at the very least, being a part of the solution, at the very least. But they're not willing. They're not willing to take that responsibility. They'll take people through workouts all day and all night. They'll say, I get results for all my clients. They'll say all the things right. But when it comes down to getting results, do they? Do they? Now, you guys are in this field, so are you the outliers? That's the question. Are you the outliers? If you ask me, are these people in Beyond Better capable of being the outliers, I wouldn't hesitate for a second. But are you? Are you the outliers? And I think if we're honest, it's not an easy yes. Are you capable? That's an easy yes. But are you really the outlier, or are you able to sort of be in a field where the level of the average is mediocrity at best? So you're going to look better by comparison, but are you truly one of the outliers who's making a difference? Now, Velma, I want you to hear me. I want you to hear everything I say here and understand it. I'm not asking you to do the Alive program. I'm not even asking you to work with this population of people who have chronic disease and hypothyroid, high blood sugar. I'm not asking you to do that. I'm just telling you there's a massive opportunity, and you guys can get people well. In every case, I don't know, but why not pursue it? And in those cases where you can't, then don't be the leak detection expert who takes money and walks away. Care about them enough to refer them somewhere else. So don't keep charging them if you're not getting a result. But I think those will be truly the exception, because I know what you're capable of. I was talking to Tasso the other day and also to April, and I shared some things, and I didn't know if I'd share them on the call, but one of them is, and I think I said some of this in the email, I just finished a Be Better 8-month program with a group of doctors, and the outcomes, the last call was really emotional. I mean, there were tears and the bonding, and but when you listen to the changes in people, they were real life-altering changes. It wasn't like, yeah, we're doing a few thousand dollars or more. It wasn't like, yeah, we hired a new employee. It was like I reconnected with my passion. You know, one person said to me, one of the lessons that I spoke about is nobody wants maintenance. You know, we use this word maintenance. We want to get people, after they get well, on a maintenance plan, and nobody wants a maintenance plan. And on that last call, she said, that changed everything. It changed everything because suddenly we opened up a whole new market. We stopped looking at people getting well and staying there. We started looking at people getting well and then getting better, and it completely revitalized my entire business. And when I listen to what they report in terms of outcomes, it's not only significant, it's momentous. And what I'm saying to you is you guys are at least as capable as every one of them. Honestly, if I had to put you side by side and you asked me who had more potential, in every case it would be you guys. So I look at all of these things and I say, what is it? And I don't want to point fingers at the field, but what is it even about this group of really good-hearted, really caring, really ambitious people that has them so stuck? And this is not a comparison of one of you against another. It's a comparison of you against your potential. You remember when I spoke about the caduceus, and I said the one snake is the divine potential of man, and the other is the physical. So when you really look at your potential, what you are capable of, and you look at what you've done, there's no shame in what you've done, and you should be proud of what you've done. But in terms of your potential, are you even knocking on the door? And I wanted you to put these questions to yourself, because in your life, my opinion doesn't matter. But I wanted you to really hold up the mirror a little bit, put these questions to yourself, and just ask some hard questions like, who's responsible for me being at a point that is less than I know I could be? Who is responsible? Whose fault is it? Who's to blame? Because if I ask it that way, you could blame the industry, you could blame the medical field, you could blame your clients, you can go, people don't want to spend that much money. But I didn't ask it that way. I asked it a different way. And I hope that it got you guys to think a little bit. So before I kind of go around, and I want to try to get, I don't know if we're going to get all of you, and this is in no way to embarrass or hurt anybody, this is really to just kind of lift you up. I'd like everybody that we bring into the hot seat to leave today's call with one piece of clarity, just one, just a true outcome that you know you're capable of, that you're going to achieve, because it's easy to get stuck in the head spinning. It's easy to look at all of the things you could maybe do. It's easy to look at all the opportunities before you, but that dilutes you. So if every one of you can come up with one thing that is truly close to your heart, and we start to examine, A, are you capable, and B, are you willing to commit to it, truly commit, then I think you're going to have that breakthrough. And by the way, if anybody doesn't want a breakthrough, that's fair. You can go, Phil, I'm good with the way things are. And you should be, by the way. This is not a condemnation of where you are. It's just when I look at the world and I look at the population and I look at the doctors and I look at all this and I go, where's the bright light? It's here. So how do I get you guys to recognize that collectively you are that bright light? And if everyone shines your best, holy shit, what we are capable of. So is there anybody who even wants to start with a comment on anything that I said or anything in the experience of going through that questionnaire?
Phil, how similar do you see the string of responses when you get to the questions about, I think most of us accept responsibility and think it, what holds us back is our own internal things. What string, if any, do you see that runs common for all of us? Because it seems like, well, I'll let you answer the question, and then I'll give you what I thought.
Well, I don't want to answer it until we go through it.
Okay.
I would rather everybody just, you know, let's talk about it one at a time, and then you guys will figure that out for yourself. But I think something that is really evident is that none of you were raised in an industry where your training included achieving a very high level of success. You know, stockbrokers, there are a lot of deadbeat stockbrokers that never make it. But they all go into it believing that they're going to be driving Ferraris. They do. They all go into this, you know, with this idea that they're going to make so much money. And I don't think the trainers ever get, and I'm not saying it should be equal in that regard, but I think that doctors go into medical school, maybe not fully driven by the money, but with a confidence and a knowledge that they're going to do well. I think lawyers, the same. I think accountants go through their training, not with a sense of making millions, but with a sense of power, that they're going to know how to put away money and invest wisely, and they're going to be taken care of. And I don't think that's anywhere in the training of any personal trainer.
Okay.
Never.
Gotta finish my phone call first.
Yeah, it's not in the expectation, I don't think.
Yeah, so I think when you look at what is ingrained, because, you know, I've said many times that when we're children, we pretend, we play, and we go with this true desire that's sitting on the psycho-spiritual line. But then as soon as you get into organized school, you're told to walk in line and sit still and take the same test as everyone else. So imagine when you go to law school or medical school, you're learning the same thing as the guy next to you, you're taking the same test, and you're really being fit into a paradigm. And there is a negative with that, because this is why I'm doing it, Be Better for Doctors, is they're stuck and they're not necessarily happy. But money's not their issue. Money's not their issue. Some of them are unhappy because they're not making the money they used to. But when I speak about the empath or the parasite, some of them have walked away from being parasites and are making less money. But that's not a thread that runs through. But I think it's a thread that runs through trainers. And I think it's because the paradigm that we operate under is we are second. We are second to the doctor. We're even second to the health club owner. In some cases in health clubs, we're second to the salesperson financially. So we find a different way of calming our ego and going, well, but we're helping people. And what I'm suggesting is, unless you're an outlier, that too is sort of a self-lie. It's a little bit of a self-deception. So I think there is this blockage that needs to be released. So you'll find that, but probably more as we go through it in terms of the commonality. Does that kind of align with what you were thinking?
Yeah. I think so.
Okay. Anyone else, any thought or comment after going through this or after anything I said?
Yeah,
oh,
I think,
Jason,
too, that Jason.
Go ahead, Velma first, then Jason.
Go ahead, girl.
I think, too, that we don't separate ourselves from the masses. Because I know I had this conversation with Jim, and we have no one to blame but ourselves. And when we continue, we're brushed constantly with, you know, whatever the connotation personal trainer is. And it's almost like we sort of accept it instead of trying to do something about it. Because there's so much that we could be doing to separate ourselves that we're not doing. So we really have no reason to be upset with anyone but ourselves.
Okay. And it's not even about being upset with yourself. It's realizing that you can be an outlier and realizing that you're limited by putting yourself in that mass.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? It's like when you look at the sea of all of the personal trainers, I'm telling you guys will stand out. But when you look at reward, I don't know that you do. You know, at least not as you should. I think there should be such a separation between what you guys get in return and what you achieve and what you accomplish and the rest of the field.
But there's some sort of belief that's stopping us from feeling like we can charge so much more or charge.
Well, we can change that. We can change that if you're willing to, but you got to be, you know, you've got to be willing to. That's the big component here is, do you have the will? Do you have the power of your own will to make that change? Jason, what were you going to say?
I was going to agree with you on your aspect of our pedigree, where we came from. This is something that Bob and I talk about a lot. Is the fact that we come from the freaking position of $8 an hour, go clean the treadmill position versus the doctors and lawyers who don't start from that standpoint. And we're consistently finding ourselves banging our head against that old thought and mindset, and it frustrates the snot out of us, and changing that has been harder than what I thought it would be, but I see the potential and the greatness that is there. Like I said, I struggle with knowing the bridge and always understanding how to do that. But to your point, I just wanted to agree with you that I think our ability to impact can be just as great as a doctor or a lawyer, and the earning potential is there. But I think for me, I come from the position of where I started from was that low income, that starting point is hard.
No, you're right. You're right. But I think recognizing it is step one. Breaking out of it is the much bigger step.
Hey, Phil, can we also talk about other people's perceptions and changing that?
Yep.
Because that's what I think is the biggest variable, man. Like, I know I can deliver more, and yet I'm a personal trainer. And it's not in my head I'm a personal trainer. Like, I'm an outlying personal trainer. To people, I'm a personal trainer.
And I'm asking you to accept that you create that. You can argue this. You can go, no, I'm not responsible for what people think of personal trainers. I know, but you're responsible for what people think of you from the first minute they meet you. So if you know that your perception is starting at that place, somebody meets you and they go, Jim, just a personal trainer, right? That's not their conscious perception, but that's their perception. From the first word you utter, from the first movement of your body in front of them, you are shaping their perception. And you want them to see you as an outlier. You want them to see you as something different.
Correct.
So, yeah, of course we can talk about it. But all of the things that we've been speaking about lend themselves to that. You doing a seminar without any exercise equipment and without teaching people to do a push-up doesn't take anything away from your expertise as a personal trainer. But you talking about being able to change your DNA expression. And I'm not asking you to be an expert. See, I think that's a fear that all of you have. They go, but what if somebody calls me on it? There's nothing to call you on. The Human Genome Project proved that we can alter the expression of our DNA. If you know that sentence, you don't have to know anymore, because what that says is if your mother had diabetes and her mother had diabetes and your father and his father had diabetes, it doesn't mean you're going to have diabetes.
This is new. I completely agree. I completely agree with that, and I actually understand that. I'm stuck in the place where I have super rich people tell me that I'm on the high end of what personal trainers charge. Like, I had a super rich guy today tell me that today, because we were talking about this, and he goes, yeah. He goes, I mean, yeah, but you still have to stay in line with kind of what some of the other people charging. You're already at the high end. So I'm like, damn, this guy's super rich, man. Like, super rich.
Has nothing to do with how rich they are. It has nothing to do with how rich they are. Jim, it has everything to do. This is hard. I know it's hard because you want to get mad at it. But this has everything to do with the perception that you've allowed. Now, I've struggled. You know my progression is, you know, 35 years ago, I said, I don't want to call myself a personal trainer, so I started saying fitness professional. Then the whole industry went fitness professional. And then I realized, okay, well, and then I'm a personal trainer. And then I went to health catalyst. And then I went to, I don't know what to call myself. But I know that I know two things. One, I know that I am a personal trainer. And two, I know that I'm not just a personal trainer. And I think anybody who meets me knows that.
Agreed.
So for me to be able to get in front of a group of doctors, I am a personal trainer. And at first I struggled with that because I felt like, why are they going to listen to a personal trainer? But they listen to me now because they see me as some kind of anomaly. So an anomaly is an outlier. And what I'm telling you is I've shared everything with you guys. I don't have a secret that I'm holding back, you know? So it really becomes at a certain point a leap. It really becomes a willingness to take responsibility and to really confront the hard question. Why do the super rich guys or anybody for that reason think that I'm charging too much? Why? Because it's something, maybe it's the way your studio looks. Maybe it's the way you advertise. Maybe it's the first meeting that they have with you. Maybe in a seminar, Jim, maybe you should start doing things totally differently and say, the only way you can meet with me, the only way you can meet with me is to go through my seminar, and I have it twice a month. That's the only way. There's no other way. You can't do a consultation. You can't meet with me. You got to go through my seminar because you have to understand. And maybe you start the seminar by going, guys, I want to say this up front because I know at a certain point you're going to swallow hard when I say it, but the minimum that I charge to work with a client is $3,000, and let me tell you why. Maybe that's how you start, you know, because right then you've set them up to look at you as different than a personal trainer. But once they're doing a lunge with a medicine ball in their hands, you're a personal trainer, unless you pre-frame it. I'm not saying never get to the lunge. I'm just saying don't lead with anything that looks like a personal trainer. Is what I'm saying resonating at all, or are you going, ah, Phil, you don't get it. These rich guys are just narrow-minded.
No, I do.
But also,
get it,
Jim,
man.
How long have those rich guys known you? I mean, like you know, people who knew me when I charged $5 a workout think that I'm out of my mind with what I charge now. But the person
I mean, I have a little bit of both. You know, I have a guy's been with me for 15 years, and he still underpays me, and he's super rich too. But I mean, this guy here is probably a year, maybe, and I just came to him. I trained him in his house from $150 an hour. That's what I charge that guy. And, you know, I mean, I think you're right, Phil. I mean, I know you're right. And Velma and I talked about this too. Like, you know, it's executing the simple things and executing them well and stuff, and I'm guilty of not doing that too. So
yeah, I'm going to tell you one thing that's kind of a little intimate that I went through. I don't know if I ever mentioned this. But my daughter, when she got into middle school, went through a really hard time. Now, you know, thank God, knock on everything, she's doing great. But she went through a really hard time where I kept coming back from business trips because she'd call me hysterical crying, and she hated her school. Now, this is a school that she had to audition to get in. Less than 10% of the kids who audition get in, and she got in. And it's a great school, and it'll lead to a great future. And if it was really a bad place for her, of course I would pull her out. But it was like her first week, and she didn't know anybody, and she felt out of place, and she hated taking the bus to school, and everything just seemed so big. And her mom, because I was traveling, her mom was listening to her cry, and she'd call me. She'd go, I'm going to just transfer her. And I go, Amy, don't. I'm going to come home. Don't transfer her. You know. And we went through this back and forth. And then finally I said, we need to go to a psychologist. Now Amy's a psychologist, so right away not to send Brooke to the psychologist. She needs to go too. But we need to learn how to guide her so we're connected. Like, I don't want to be in this tug of war where I say keep her there and you say don't. So we need to go to a psychologist.
Sorry, I'm in the middle of that right now with a bunch of ex-wife bullshit.
You are? Okay. So you can relate to it.
Yeah.
So, Amy, we have an arrangement where Brooke moved on to Amy's health insurance. And it's a little different than mine, but mine is much, much more expensive. So Amy said, let me find someone on Brooks Insurance. And she sent me the email, and I just looked, and I said, this is not the person that we're going to. It's not that she's a bad psychologist, I don't know, but I said, we're going to go to the best. So rather than paying what the insurance would, like the copay, you know, $5, I wound up, and I said, I'm going to pay this out of my pocket. I wound up paying a top child psychologist in Boca $220 an hour. Now, it's not because I'm leaking with money and just wanted to spend it. It's because I wanted to go to the best. And you know what? If she told me it's $300, I would have paid it. If she told me it's $350, I would have paid it. And thank God we went to her because she wasn't the reason that things worked out, but she certainly helped. So I'm just saying, it's not, if somebody says to you, you're at the high end of the personal trainer, it's because I'm at the high end of the personal trainers. You know what I mean? Like, of course.
Right. Well, that's what I said. There's a reason for that. Right.
Yeah, I mean, you want to go to a shitty trainer, go. God, really, pay $35 an hour. You'll get a shitty workout from a shitty trainer and no result, but you can do that. So I'm just saying you guys have to get this inside you so it is so real and it's not questionable. So you never even question your value anymore. All right, let me start. Tony, are you limited on time?
Yeah, very much so.
All right, so can we start with you?
Yep.
So then rather than going question by question, just for the sake of time, tell me what you felt, what you experienced, what you thought as you went through this. Did it change your thinking at all? Or maybe you could just kind of report to us a little of what you reflected on.
I mean, I was just saying before you were on the call, it was a little painful for me to have to make the admissions that I did because, you know, and I was, you know, really, 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 really real in my responses. And it was, you know, it's frustrating, which has, you know, been part of the theme from where I look at this stuff from the beginning. But, you know, it's part of the realization. And some of the things that even Jim was talking about earlier, you know, resonate. I hear, like, you know, from – I have a couple of wealthy clients, and they're like, yeah, you know, you charge – I was speaking to some other guy, you charge so much more. So it's breaking out of that bubble and being able to make a difference and have it be acknowledged by the people that you market to. That's a big challenge to me without having the feeling of fighting for it.
So what is it that you want that you don't have now?
Well, the first one I said was financial stability. That was a big one.
Okay, so that's a really good general term.
Mm-hmm.
What would give you financial stability? And be real specific, a number of dollars. What would you need? How would you know that you are financially stable?
Steady $20,000 a month.
$20,000 a month from your business gross?
Wow, well, that's a good question. Gross. I didn't even think about gross or net. I was let's say $20,000 net.
You personally walking away with $20,000, you paying income tax on $20,000, $240,000 a year.
Yeah.
That would make you feel financially stable.
In comparison to where I am now.
One of the shocking things that happens when you earn more is you somehow are required to spend more. How it happens, I don't know. It's not always just moving into a bigger house and taking on a car payment, although it often is that. But I will tell you that from a place where you don't earn $20,000 a month to a place where you do seems exciting. But when you get there, I could be wrong, but when you get there, I don't know that it's enough to make you feel financially stable. I think it's a place to make you feel like you're earning well. But I also want you to know it's fragile. So I'm saying to you, it's not enough. And I'm saying that because when you pass through that point, you're going to realize there are other elements, such as what do you have in savings? What do you have in investments? And this is a part of where I look at the difference between the doctors and the trainers is it's not that we're not sophisticated, it's that as an industry, we were never taught any of this. We were never taught, you know, everybody should have a lawyer and an accountant that really watch your back. But what happens is we go to the accountant when we have to pay our taxes to try to find deductions, and we only go to the lawyer when we're in trouble. So I'm saying if true financial stability is the goal, it's going to be more than that. Now, I'm not saying don't pursue that. But I just want you to be able to set the bar even higher. What do you think of what I'm saying? You think, Phil, you're crazy, you're an elitist?
No, I'd
be happy to make $250,000 a year?
Not at all. I just think that's the next step.
Okay, good. So if that's the next step, do you want to talk about what you're making now? If you don't, that's okay. I'm going to guess it's a fraction of that, though, right?
Yeah.
How do you see yourself making that leap? What do you see changing? It can't be more clients.
No. No, it's more per client and doing more group training. Or not necessarily group training, but doing more group programs.
What do you honestly think about the idea of creating a relationship with new clients where they give you a check for $6,000 up front?
Well,
we had
that discussion last week.
I'm asking again.
Yeah, I do. It's a step, though. Like, it's, you know, to get really, really real, I believe it's possible, but I know it'll be possible when I receive the check.
Which is a paradox.
Actually, I know it'd be possible when I ask for it. Even if I don't receive the check.
You know, I'm going to say something similar about realtors that I said about stockbrokers. I have many good friends who are realtors. And thinking through the list right now in my head, they all do well. They all do really well. So, you know, they work for a commission. They have sometimes 3 commission months. So if a commission is $28,000, $32,000, $18,000, that's a good month. Now, the truth is they might have commissionless months, and they stress. They do stress. But they have no question that when a deal closes, that's what they're entitled to. Now, I know some other realtors that I'm not going to say this to them, but I'm going to say it to you. They're hacks. They don't work it in a sophisticated way. They don't understand that it's really about relationships. So when the real estate industry changed, they went into rentals because it was easy. The rentals were the low-hanging fruit. But what they would typically get is 1 month's rent. So if they rent a place for $1,200 a month, their commission is $1,200. Now keep in mind, the other guy is getting a commission of $28,000. I want you to be able to make that shift. Because if you're thinking that $20,000 a month will come from more groups and more people and jumping your rates up from $100 to $200, it's a long journey. I'm saying when you get to the place where you might go a month or two without new clients, but when you get one, they give you $6,000. Three new clients, Tony, puts you there every month. Three new clients. So, you know, when I say this to you, you're either perceiving it as it sounds good, but it'll never happen. And if that's the case, then I want you to dig deep and go, why? Why can I not accept that? Because whatever the reason is, I know you're worth it. Shit, I know you're worth it. I know you're capable of asking for it. But it's your own fear. It's your own insecurity. It's your own EEM. And if you know that that's what it is, then you got to be bold enough to challenge it. I know the fear that rises up. The fear that rises up is I've been through some shit before. I don't want to ever be in a position where I can't take care of my family.
Yep.
But that's where you're tentative. That's where you don't believe. If you believed it, you wouldn't have that fear. So the belief has to come first. You're saying when I get it, I'll believe it. I'm saying when you believe it, you'll get it. And I'm opening this to anybody. Like anybody, feel free to jump in. If you feel like I'm either being hard on Tony or unfair, you know, say that. Because
I mean, I received that entirely. I received that entirely. I received the smoke. I mean, I get it. I get it. It's like the fly in the window pane. I respond to what you're saying. I know what you're saying is correct. I don't think that you're being, you know, difficult or hard on me at all.
It's just so difficult. Like, why is it so hard?
It is hard, and this is
part
this
of it,
is
part of the even. It's not that I don't want to do the Alive program. It really has nothing. It has more so to do with my trying to get away from the pack. It's like you don't. Is this a confidence issue? If I had more confidence, like I would not be struggling so much with separating myself from everyone else. And then there's the fear of separation because I'm essentially in the same boat as Tony because I'm thinking, well, I could do some more, add some more people to my group and, you know, raise my prices again in January. But like you're saying, that's a really long journey.
All right, so let's stay with Tony for a minute because, Tony, I want to come up with one thing that you're going to think about and then email the group tomorrow either saying, yes, I'm going to do it or no, I'm not, okay?
Right.
So this is a little of what I think. I think you have a reputation that is good. I think if people know you, they're going to say he's a good trainer. He's a good guy. He's a family guy. I would love to see you outside of Staten Island do a seminar where nobody knows you. And I would love you to force yourself to almost play the role of the Tony 2 years from now. And I said to you once before, and it's not that the tie will make a difference, but I said, you know, when you do your videos, you're creating a perception. Those who know you go, yeah, that's good old Tony. You know, but those who don't go, yeah, it's Tony. He's a trainer in Staten Island. But I think this would be a level of elevation and maybe something where you could walk out of there going, holy shit, they really responded. And I don't know how this happens. Maybe you know somebody who has a facility in Manhattan. Maybe you know somebody in the five towns who runs a health club, you know, somewhere that there's a level of affluence that you could be a speaker and you do a 90-minute talk and you literally sell nothing, but you do the talk as if you're trying to sell them on paying you $6,000. Because as long as you're in your environment – You're very stuck. You're kind of in the mud of what everybody thinks of you and what you think they think of you. But if you like just had an appearance to appear somewhere, and there are 15 people or 25 people in the room, and you do your best 90 minutes, and somewhere in there you go, now, I take on new clients, but I am committed to getting those clients' results. And if you're struggling, is anybody here struggling with a chronic issue? Yes? Oh, diabetes? Okay. Here's what I want you to know. It is self-imposed and in most cases reversible. I'm going to explain that as we go. Anybody else? You got a thyroid issue. How long have you struggled with that? 15 years. You're on medication? Has the medication helped you? Okay, I'm not surprised. I'm going to talk a little about that. And if you take that role, nobody there is going, nah, he's just a trainer in Staten Island. I see it. I can see you doing that well. I think it would be easier for you to speak to an audience who doesn't know you than be in a place where people are bringing their friends and they're going, yeah, Tony's a great guy.
That Joe, sounded like a... How do you get 20 people in those seats?
What's that?
How do you get 25 people in those seats?
Well, I'm talking to Tony, so I'm not saying for everybody, but that would be a question to explore. Who do you know? Who do you know that may have a business somewhere? Who do you know that may be connected with a hospital that they can fill a room with 20 people? You know, who do you know that runs some kind of office that they like to get their employees to show up? I'm not asking you to sell anything. I just want to see if you can go in with that. With that image, go in believing that this is who you are and walk out with them believing that this is who you are. Because if you do it once, as you said, then you can do it in Staten Island.
All right.
And, you know, Tony, I remember Tony from I don't know how many years ago, but you were always about, like, you know, these marketing things and finding little ways to make money. I mean, if you just set the intention of getting 20 people in a room somewhere outside of Staten Island, I know you could do it. You know, I don't have the specific answer to Jason's question right now, but I know it can be done. You know, if we sit and brainstorm about it, we'll figure it out. We'll come up with 5 different ways to make it happen.
Hey, Tony?
Yep.
Hey, I just want to give you a different perception real quick. I mentioned this to Velma, and I've been wanting to tell you about it. I met you, I think, in 1997 at Phil's Personal Trainers Business Forum, and I was kind of like, whoa! I was like, that's Tony Books Aviles. I knew who you were. I knew who you were back then for some reason. I'm not even sure how I knew that,
right.
But I was kind of wowed by your presence back then. So that's 19 years ago. So I just wanted to give you that.
That's a really interesting point, Tony.
Well, I appreciate hearing it.
But you have to understand, you settled in to what your clients now think of you as.
No, I mean, there's no two ways about it. I mean, my trajectory at one period of time was like really, really, you know, heading somewhere. And then you know, I mentioned that whole thing about, you know, in the work that we had to do in preparation for this. And that really knocked me for a loop. I mean, it really did. And then, you know, ever since then, you know, it was going from swimming and trying to win a gold to treading water. And that's really been, you know, then other circumstances have happened, you know, like part of the things that happened in the last couple of years have been different. You know, my wife's not working. She has been working for the last couple of years, and that's made it a big change in everything as well. And Sandy, I mean, the list could go on and on.
But understand this, because I know you're going to get this. All of those are EEM strengtheners. Everything that you explained just now, that list, that's all feeding the EEM, which wants to hold you back.
Yep.
So you cannot be held back and get to $20,000 a month. It's not possible. You cannot let the EEM rule you and get to $20,000 a month.
Right.
Right? It's like saying run and stand still. I mean, you can't do both of them.
Right.
So if you're recognizing, if you have this holy shit moment where you go, All of these things made my EEM so fucking strong that it's not letting me go anywhere. You use the word trajectory. Your trajectory is zero because your EEM goes, that's not safe, that's not safe, that's not safe. How are you going to take care of your kids? How are you going to take care of your wife? She's not working. What if a hurricane comes? That's all EEM stuff.
Yep.
And you said that the hero that's most elusive for you is planning, so that's why I'm suggesting do something that is so far out of your realm geographically and logistically that you're forced to plan. How do you get 20 people in a room in a hotel on 59th Street? You know, again, it's up to you to decide where.
Right.
But I think when you face this, and you at first the negative talk mouse is going to go, you can't do that. You don't know anybody like that. But you'll start to think, who do I know? You know, who does my wife know that knows somebody? You know, who has a business with a conference room?
Right.
Who's doing a talk that I could be the opening talk? Just when you start to kind of go through that process, who has a really good Facebook marketing presence that if they invite all of their people to my talk, and even if nobody has a clue who you are, you should promote it as if they're all Jim Beatty, as if they're all awed by the fact that Tony Aviles is going to be there, Tony Brooks Aviles, because they're going to feed off of that. And then you show up and you start talking about changing your DNA. Nobody thinks of you as just a trainer. So I want you to think about that for a day, literally, not more. And I want you to just post to the board tomorrow either, okay, I'll do it, and then we're all behind you. And if you want to discuss it, and if you want to call me and figure out how do I get 20 people in a room, we'll do that.
Phil,
and I don't think this is the end-all be-all, but what I know is if you stay where you're at, you're not getting to that financial stability you're looking for. Your EEM won't let you. It's keeping you safe by holding you back. And when we think of change the numbers, change the concept of the numbers, rather than thinking of 20,000 a month as a big number, it's three new clients. If habitually you do two seminars a month with 20 people in each, you only need to get three. So it's the same math, just applied to a different level of thought.
I got it.
All right. All right, let us know tomorrow, okay?
Okay, we'll do. And I'm getting
all right,
call.
Tony. Thank you
right,
for
guys,
being so honest,
much.
By the way.
Thank you.
All right, any thoughts on that? On anything we discussed with Tony?
Phil, from the standpoint of brainstorming his where he does that, what would happen, and I don't know if he has capability, like he has all these email addresses that people get his messages. Some of those people have to be out of Staten Island. So if he were able to identify them and then send a note out to them that says, pick 10 of them, say, I've been working on a revolutionary new presentation.
No, they've seen him in his workout clothes. They perceive him. I want a whole room of people who really haven't known him before.
So like coming to one of our places, going to Jason's place in Indiana.
Jason Barron?
Jared, I'm sorry.
Okay. Jason in this group?
Yeah.
Jason, you holding out? You have a place in Indiana?
Jason's in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't know where everybody's at. I'm losing it.
Outside of Florida, it's all Indiana.
I was trying to figure out, wait, is there somebody else here?
I thought it was New York outside. Is that just on the other side of Georgia?
There's Florida, New York, California, and Indiana. That's really all there is. All right, so anyway, go ahead. So Jason in Indiana.
No, so like he could come to my club to do his president. No one knows who the hell he is here.
Right.
That's a resource for him.
Right, but you sort of have to be in on it.
In on it. What's that mean?
Meaning that the whole idea that I had for Tony is Tony has a limited perception of who he is. So when he does his Motivation Mondays or when he does a talk for people, he's coming from the place of this is who I am. And this is who I am is a personal trainer who charges modestly, who really cares about the people of Staten Island. So if there are five people in that room that he speaks at who know him, it kills the temporary illusion. Like it's an illusion that's going to become real. So I want everybody in that room to be putty. I want nobody to know him. So when he walks in the room, there's a clean slate. And he comes off delivering a message that they go, wow, I wish this guy lived here. I wish I could train with this guy.
Mm.
Because then he actually has the experience of not being the Tony Aviles of 2016, but sort of getting a glimpse at what he's going to be. Do you understand what I'm saying? So I almost think like an old friend from 20 years ago who now works for an accounting firm. You know, there's got to be an inside person who knows what Tony's trying to do and can put 20 people in a room.
Mm.
You know, it can be an event. It can be – there are so many different associations that meet. You know, it can be a women in business association. I mean, if you put your mind to doing it, you'll find a way to do it.
Yeah.
But I don't want to get in this place of, you know, using our email address, our database, because that's already the audience that he has.
Mm.
Okay, let's go to April. April? Is April here?
The darn mute button. I'm here.
April and I had a really good talk the other day. And one of the things April said is, I don't want to be a personal trainer. And I was surprised not one bit. And on the last call or the last couple of calls, I kind of felt that she should be directed towards something more spiritually connected with nature. And those were the kind of conversations we had. And I think that it was either resonating with her or it was aligning with what she was already exploring. Right, April?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you kind of went through some introspection before I even sent out this exercise. But what did you experience going through it, if anything? What thoughts?
I thought it was painful. To admit that, yes, it's in my court, it's my responsibility to make changes, and it definitely feels like some old stuff continuing to resurface, I don't know what else to say about that, yeah.
Okay. What monsters do you think bother you the most?
Money worry, for sure. Wanting clarity.
Clarity's been a tough one for you. And even if you don't mind me reading what you wrote, you want a fun, joyful, playful life and career that also creates a sense of security monetarily. And then in parentheses, you say my cabin in the woods. Now, nothing there is related to clarity. It's all very general, right? So it's kind of like, I'd love to have fun. What would be fun for you? I don't know. That's sort of, you know, how. So all of the exercises related to mindset become very powerful when you have clarity. When you don't have clarity, it's like you're buying a GPS that just doesn't give you a destination. It goes, make a left, make a right, make a left, make a right, and where are you going? I don't know. Somewhere fun. So I think that's really a huge challenge for you, is you're in this position of money worry, but you're not clear on what's going to get you out of it, and that creates a tremendous chaotic sense of confusion. Am I right?
Yeah.
So my belief is and has always been that the first fix for you is getting clarity. Now, if you don't mind me kind of going back in time, you went through something that was very profound. You decided at one point that you'd like to own your own studio, and I remember this very clearly because I kept saying, don't worry about the how. Don't worry about the how. Just set it as a true goal or what you might call an intention, right? I said, set it as an outcome. And then some miraculous things happened, or they appeared to be miraculous, where suddenly you own your own studio. And then you brought in a friend, and somehow the vision didn't match the reality, and it became more of a headache than it was worth, and you started to try to figure out how to get out of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
What did you take from that, if anything? Like, what's the good lesson that stayed with you? Was there one?
No.
Anybody else here have any kind of insight from that, just what I described, of any lesson that might be inherent in that?
Well, she didn't create a pathway. She sort of let it happen to her, rather, guiding it with a vision that she had that she wanted to be. Like, the friend sort of came into it, and there was no way of vetting that friend before they came in and said, well, here's what I want, here's the standard, here's what I need to have, here's my culture, this is what we're going to do. Before they came in?
Yeah, but she did set the intention.
Right.
And it did happen. And I think really what happened in April's mind is, I thought I wanted this, but I didn't. So there, it creates a reluctance, whether it's conscious or beneath the conscious level, of, you got to be careful what you wish for because you might really get it. And I think that creates a lot of distance from the idea of clarity. Do you understand? Like, if you wish for something and you get it and you go, this sucks, and then you wish for something else and you get it and you go, this sucks, you almost want to shut down the wishing. Do you get what I'm saying, Tasso?
Yeah. It's like every time she wishes for something, she gets it, but then it sucks, so why the hell should I be wishing for anything?
Right, so then you host the negative talk monster who says things like, you don't deserve anything anyway, and how are you going to ever figure it out? So, April, can you just, the cabin in the woods, that's a recurring theme that's never gone away. Can you tell us about the cabin in the woods? Anything about it. Just, why does this show up? What does it look like? What does it feel like? What does it mean to you? What does it signify? Why is it important? Anything you want related to this idea of the cabin in the woods.
I've always wanted a cabin in the woods since I was in my 20s. I see it, there's woods around it, but it has a clearing so you can see the other mountains around it or hills. Has a wraparound porch. Land for gardening. I don't know.
Have you been there in meditation?
Yeah.
And when you go visit this cabin in meditation, is it the same cabin every time?
Yeah. It's more since when I was in my 20s, but it's just gotten more clear.
So now if I change the question, because the answer is you'd like to be in the cabin in the woods. That's the answer to a question, right? But if I give you a different question, I say, what would you like to do for a living to earn that cabin in the woods? Do you have any answer at all?
I don't fucking know.
That's the answer? I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
So what if we work it backwards? What if we lock in on the cabin in the woods? What if you stop wrestling with that I don't fucking know question?
Mm-hmm.
What if you just really lock in on that cabin? Do you know anybody who has a cabin in the woods?
Not like the one that I want.
Have you been to
yes,
one?
Yes, I know. Yes.
Tell us about the one you've been to.
It's a cabin in a place called The Woods.
Oh, really? That's the name of it, The Woods?
It's called The Woods in West Virginia, and I've looked around at all, like almost all of them there. So it's got a great enclosed deck patio and one that's open. It's got an open floor plan on the bottom with a nice, lots of windows that go all the way up to the second floor. Three bedroom, two bath, full kitchen, and it's this one's placed in the woods. Deer, bear, all kinds of animals come around.
Is it a home? Somebody live in it?
It's a weekend home, but there are other places in that place that are homes.
And are any of them used for anything like retreats or meditation centers or anything like that?
Not to my knowledge. Not that particular one either.
I'm going to just tell you something that I hope doesn't create, I'm not looking for you to envy what I'm about to tell you. I just want to share something interesting. I get calls all the time from friends, from people. Now, I think my world has just been bigger than yours. What I mean by that is the trips I've taken, the airplanes, the people, the seminars. You know, I've just been in touch with a lot more people. So a lot of opportunities just show themselves to me. But I got a call from these people who I know who are actually in the TV production business. So this is nothing to do with fitness. They bought a home on an organic farm in Mexico. And they asked me if I would like to do a retreat there. They have the property, they have the farm, they just want me to bring 10 people and do a retreat, and they're looking to share the revenues. I'm just telling you that because it came my way. I'm not asking you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I have another friend who is a travel agent who has a resort connection in Colorado and has called me several times, are you ready to do the retreat now? I know somebody else who has invited me to come to Cancun many times. And I don't do it because it doesn't fit into my life right now. But what I'm saying is these opportunities, just like the studio you never knew would show up, these opportunities exist. Somewhere there is a cabin in the woods where you can do a retreat. You don't have to own it right away, but somewhere there is one. I don't think you want to be a personal trainer for the simple reason that you told me you don't want to be a personal trainer. But I do think that the idea of retreat and cabin and escape, they all lend themselves to a sort of healing, to a therapeutic healing retreat. And even if I just think of you doing the laughing yoga, and I look at how the people, of course, enjoyed it and laughed, but I see that you like to be that kind of leader. Am I right?
Yeah.
My concern for you, and this I'm sharing this from our personal conversation the other day, is when I ask what you're doing now to kind of go the next step, you mentioned several things. And I don't know that you should do several things because I think it leaves you in that place of I don't fucking know. So I think that if I were able to spend 3 days with you keeping you focused, I would get you so clear on that cabin in the woods and deciding what you're going to be doing there that feels really good that people will give you money for. I would just keep going there and going there and going there and going there until you create that vision. And from that, I would figure out what you do for a living. That's what I mean. I would do it in reverse.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you start looking for courses to take and things to learn and, you know, shaman and Reiki and all these different things, you wind up back in that, now I have skills, but I don't know what to do with them. So if the one thing that is consistent for you is that cabin in the woods, then create something. Because I swear to you, April, just like you got a call and somebody said, take my studio, that can happen. The opportunities are out there. I just told you three, and I'm not even looking for that. So imagine if you set your intention on that. I also mentioned Theta Healing to you, and I have a name, and I just think you should look her up on YouTube, and it's just a good place to start exploring.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I'm exploring that.
Her name is Vianna, V-I-A-N-N-A. I think if you just look up Vianna Theta Healing, you'll find her.
Yeah, I have.
You have already? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What did you think?
I find it fascinating. And I have found a couple of people in the area to do that as well, or have taken the classes or whatever. So I can look into that more. And I also do have somebody that I work with who does Reiki as well.
Okay.
So I'm not, and I found a shaman as well. So I'm working with a couple different people.
Good. But before you get too caught up in the three of those, get into this, what am I doing in the cabin in the woods?
Okay.
Theta Healing, the reason I think I really sort of like it, when I don't want to sound like this is a Phil thing, but why I feel that this is something I should share with you, is because it is aligned with making people better. There's a huge meditative element to it.
Mm-hmm.
It is probably best done in nature, removed from the immediate world of where people are stuck.
Mm-hmm.
You do it one-on-one, but you can do it in groups. In other words, I can see you running a retreat with 12 or 15 people. But at a given time in the group, you're working with one person. They're going into a theta state. What are you seeing? What are you feeling? And everyone else is absorbed in it, the mirror neuron thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I just see you being such a relaxed professional leader in that realm. That's what I got for you. I hope it helps.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, thank you.
Anyone else have any thoughts at all for April?
Can I ask her a question?
Yeah.
Hey, April, how did you
yeah.
Where did the studio idea come from? Like, how did you imagine that you wanted to own a studio? Like, how did you think that owning a studio would...
I never really wanted a studio. It was one of those things, like, it came to me.
Oh.
Yeah.
So did you think that that would eventually get you to the cabin in the woods, or did you just look at it as an opportunity?
Yeah, well, it was as prep for the cabin in the woods, trying to get workshops there, and then the people from there coming up out to the woods. Yeah, there was a bit of that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone else? Any thoughts, comments, questions, ideas for April? Because I got to tell you guys, I feel like she's been through a struggle. I've seen her kind of come up victorious in terms of attitude and mindset and then get kicked back. And I've you know, watched this over the years. But I do really feel like she's sort of on the brink of a breakthrough. I think it's courageous and correct to step away from personal training. I think it's the right thing for her now.
Yeah.
I also
hey,
think...
April.
Let me
hey,
just
April,
make one point, and I'm gonna let you talk, Jim. I also think that whatever kinds of healing we integrate, the mind, spirit, peace, are the ones that we as an industry or as a collective are the least practiced in, and they're every bit as important. So I don't think it's a complete departure. I think it's coming from a different place in terms of human betterment. Go ahead, Jim.
Oh, April, I was just going to offer to you that when you're doing something that's like that's new or out of the box or you know, different or whatever, you can make those rules. I don't think rules exist. Delma and I were talking about this yesterday a little bit. I think you can do it any way you want to.
Yeah.
What do you mean? Be a little more specific. What you mean by that?
You have the freedom to be you and to do it the way you want to. And I mean, there's certain things that have. I mean, obviously, you got to make money to pay the rent and things like that. But what goes on at that place in the woods, and what goes on in your healing things, and what goes on, like, you're the healer and you see what's fit, so you can do it any way you want to. You don't have to fit into a box that so and so healer does it this way or so and so healer does it this way or whatever. You can do it any way that you see fit. So.
Right. Yeah.
Good.
Cool. Thanks.
Okay. Who's up next? Velma.
Yes.
All right. You've been through a lot of stuff, a lot of internal struggle, trying to figure things out. You try really hard to figure things out. You want answers all the time, right?
Yes.
Why this? Why that? Why am I doing this to myself? Why?
Yes.
Okay. But the why is not always that important. The what you want is really the most important. And you could spend a lot of time trying to figure out why you did the things you did. And all it's going to do in most cases is lead you in a loop of trying to figure out why you did the things you did.
Isn't it wise to try and figure it out so you stop putting yourself through the thing?
Well, to a point. And this is what I always think about therapy, that to get those answers, you could really go through 20 years of therapy. And that's not an exaggeration. I know people who do that.
Yeah.
And then you'll get the answer. And maybe it has something to do with your thoughts about your mom when you were a child. Maybe it has something to do with something that happened to you when you're 6 years old. I mean, you figure it out. And then you feel some sense of liberation, I hear. But isn't it better to just kind of move to the next place? So if you're going, why am I stuck? Why am I stuck? Why am I stuck? Get unstuck, and you don't really have to figure out the why. So, yeah, there are times that you want to say, why do I keep doing this to myself? Why do I keep shooting myself in the foot? So you'll stop doing it. But if you can stop doing it, who cares why? Do you get what I'm saying?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
So what is the thing you want that you don't have now?
Confidence.
This is a
Not
little wizard. This
anything.
Is a little Wizard of Ozzy.
Okay.
I mean, the lion had courage all along, right?
Oh yeah. Okay, I get it. I got it. I got it.
I mean, I don't know that you're ever going to reach a milestone where you go, "I got it now. I got my confidence."
Right. But maybe it's from lack of not doing enough. You know, because I think doing more will give me more confidence. And I think for a long time, I lost a lot of clarity about which direction I wanted to go in.
So when was the last time you had clarity? When was the last time you had clarity?
I'd say it's been this past week. I've been going through the exercises and getting more and more clarity. Probably just very recently.
Okay, so tell us that clarity that you have now. How does that manifest? What's clear?
It's clear, honestly, just talking and listening to you talk to Tony in April, that there's more fear associated with the Alive program than anything else. Because I'm continually doing the things that I'm more comfortable with. So I figure, well, why not make the things that I'm more comfortable with bigger and more lucrative, or at least try to.
Okay, so what is the thing? What is the thing you're most comfortable with that can be more lucrative and bigger?
The things that I'm bored with, which is the whole personal training. You know, make my butt bigger or give me bigger muscles and all that kind of stuff. I want to master something else. I want to be better at something else. But it's learning the new skill set to become better at something else. And that.
Do you ever have the desire to be? Like a QVC person, do you ever like watch an infomercial and go, I can do that? Like, do you ever see Jillian Michaels and go, I could be better than that?
No.
You don't have that desire at all?
No, I have the desire to do online stuff to educate people, but trying to be like a celebrity or like a fitness celebrity, that I'm not so interested in. So if I could find a place where I could do what I wanted to and teach people everywhere rather than, you know, doing the same things that I'm doing right at the moment, I think that would make me really happy. Though,
all right,
I mean,
I'm going to ask you a few unrelated questions. I'm just kind of feeling you out, okay?
Okay.
Do you feel more connected to empowering women than helping people get fit, or is it doesn't matter?
Women empowerment, definitely.
Why?
Because I struggle so much, and I think there's a lot of that I can take to women to teach them to sort of walk through it. And even though I'm still struggling in this moment, I still feel like I can really help people, women specifically.
If you were to write a book, and I'm not asking you to, nor will I ask you to, but if you were to write a book for women right now that you felt they needed most, what would you title it? What would they need to know? What would they need to get from this book?
How you look doesn't matter.
All right. Isn't there a bit of a contradiction here?
Yeah.
So how do you navigate that? If your message is how you look doesn't matter, yet you're in the business of making people look better, how do you bridge that?
It has to come from internal confidence. Everything's internal. And then whatever comes from the inside eventually ends up on the outside.
I feel a real contradiction. I don't know that a single woman would buy that book, or a married one. I don't know that anybody would buy the book from somebody who is in the business of making people look better, saying it doesn't matter how you look.
I think that that would be the draw. Like, I would be drawn to something like that. Like, I wonder what she would think if she's a personal trainer and she has been. Like, why would she say that how you look doesn't really matter?
April, what do you think? I'm asking because you're a woman. Or Tammy. Or Tasha.
Hey, I'm not a woman.
No, you understand them.
Really?
Yeah, you understand them.
Obviously not.
Because, Velma, you are, and we spoke about this, you have too many opportunities. Your head can turn in too many directions. And sometimes people give you an opportunity, almost go, me? You know, and that's the confidence thing. But then you talk to yourself and you go, I do deserve this opportunity. But there's you're not a single focus kind of person because there's a lot that you're capable of, right? So I'm looking for your deepest message, your deepest passion. And if that's going to be geared toward women, that doesn't mean only focus on women. But if you're saying you need confidence, then let's speak to that audience where you will most develop that confidence. And if that's women, how do we get you into that role? And I'm not downplaying what you said, that it's on the inside that matters. But I don't, it's not congruent. I don't believe you fully believe that, or you wouldn't be helping people with the way they look.
Okay, that makes sense.
Did you ever see that guy, Nick? I can't think of his last name, but he has no arms or legs.
Nick,
no?
He has arms.
I can't think of his last name.
The guy,
you know,
that
who I mean?
Climbed Mount Everest?
Yes, he's gone surfing, he's climbed mountains. What
yeah,
is it?
I know who you're talking about.
Vaguely, I remember something.
Okay, so
like that.
When you see his message, and if he says, you know, it doesn't matter what your limits are, you go, oh, yeah, I want to hear from this guy, right? Because there's an obvious – but, Velma, you look very fit. You look like somebody who takes pride in the way she looks. So I'm just giving you an extreme, like it doesn't resonate. I would almost want to hear that fitness comes from the inside out rather than it doesn't matter. Like, I would say it matters, but you're working on the wrong part.
Yeah, I see. But I guess it's more strength and empowerment and just feeling like you're not heard. Like, because a lot of times I feel like I'm not heard because I don't speak up. And so it's all coming from me. Like, that's all my decision. That's all my choice. Because I'm not speaking up, I'm not being heard. You know, so it's, but it's feeling like, what am I trying to say here? Almost like I'm not being seen. So there's a part of me that, like, when you mentioned Jillian Michaels, you know, trying to be more visible, like, I really don't want to be more visible, but I'd love to help women be more empowered. And part of that is I probably should be more visible so that I can empower more women.
No, I think you can certainly work on the message more than the visibility, if that really is something that resonates with you. But
yes.
I would love to find, and this is not to limit you, I would love to find for you a single focus that changes your perception of your own value. So in other words, if you're working with a woman and you're going to bring her to a place that not only did she lose 14 pounds and not only is she able to wear different clothing, but she can say, I'm powerful and strong and I'm heard,
yeah,
is that worth $6,000? That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for congruence. So that Velma can put something out there that she has absolute belief in the value of it. So when
so
you say the same old stuff that I'm already bored with, there's no way that perception is going
to
be worth $6,000.
So
do you understand what I'm saying?
So lowering the fear of my wanting to present the Alive program?
It just doesn't. It can't. The Alive program can be a vehicle. It's not about the Alive program. The Alive program works. It's a vehicle whereby you can help people improve their fitness. You know, you can do a 3-week version of it. You can do an 8-week version. You can do a 13-week version.
Okay,
you know, all
I
of these
it.
Things are sound and legitimate. But I don't want you to feel like you're second to the Alive program. I want you to feel like it's a tool in your toolbox. So
no,
what
no,
is
no,
the value that Velma brings? And do you remember what I said to you last time we spoke privately on the phone about the way you can view people?
Yes, instead of viewing people as which direction I should go in, I should start looking at people as what tool can I use in the toolbox to help them, because I have so many options that I could use.
Well, yeah, almost. Look at everybody as being on their way to their divine potential.
Okay.
So the question you want to elicit is, what can I do for them now?
Ah, okay.
So if you're looking at it through the lenses of I want to empower women, I think there is a congruence where you go, tell me a little about yourself. And they go, well, I'm in a job I don't really like. I'd like to have a baby, but I'm afraid to lose my job. And you know, and when you're talking to them in that way, I think what's happening is you're viewing them as you need to be divinely perfect, but you're limited right now, so how can I best help you?
Okay.
I can't give you the answers because that's not my niche. But if it can be yours, then you will have extreme value in your mind.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm being clear. Can anybody help me, or is everybody confused by what I'm saying?
Everybody's
confused.
That makes a lot of sense.
Okay. So what I'm looking for is the one thing. Like I said to Tony, if you can do a talk as if you're worth $6,000, then okay, something's just shifted for you, right? I said to April, if you can really meditate on this cabin in the woods and tell me what's going on in there, what are you doing in there, what do you love, what's giving you the fun and playfulness, then we have a target that we can figure out how to get her there. So what I'm saying to you is, what lenses do you need to view people through so that what you deliver is worth $6,000? And if you're just looking at it as improving their glutes, you're never going to accept that that's worth $6,000 because you've done that all along for far less.
Right. So I'm increasing my own perceived value. I think I understand what you're saying. It's in my own mind, I'm increasing my own value.
By creating an outcome that's worth it.
Yes.
So if part of your outcome is empowerment, for a woman to go, yes, I am strong. Yes, I am empowered. And Velma helped me get there. The question of, was she worth $6,000 is, of course she was worth $6,000.
Yes.
So there needs to be enough of a shift so you don't feel like you're doing the same thing, but enough utilization of your skill set so you're using what you feel comfortable with, because that's going to give you the confidence. Here's what I'm going to ask you to do, and I'm going to say the same thing to you that I said to Tony. I want you to think about this for a day and then either respond by going, yes, I'm going to do it, or no, I'm not, okay?
Okay.
I want you to write, and I know you're a very good writer, but I also know that you can get very, once you get going, you can get going, right? So I want you to limit this to two paragraphs.
Yes, sir.
But I want you to write to the group, here's how I can empower women and why it's worth $6,000.
Okay.
I'm not just asking you to do this as an exercise. We can literally turn this into ad copy. But it needs to come from you.
Okay.
Now, as I said, same with Tony. If you think about it and you reject it, you go, no, that's dumb, I don't want to do that, then that's okay. I'm not offended.
No, I think that would be helpful.
Good. All right, Jim. Jim, I feel like you're close. I feel like there's an anger in you that's healthy.
Yes.
But I feel like now that anger has to become fuel to prompt you to do something differently.
Agree.
So what is the thing you want that you don't have?
Two main things. I want to be recognized as more than a trainer and someone that works side by side with doctors to bring about real change. That's one. And two is financial freedom. I don't want to be stable. I want to be free from worrying about money at all.
Well, I got to ask you the same thing then that I asked earlier is, what does that mean in numbers? How do you know you're financially free?
I think it actually looks like that there's a team of people below me, not even a big team necessarily, but other people doing what I do too, because I can't work enough hours or charge. Sorry, it's a helicopter flying here. sorry about that. I don't believe that I can charge enough or work enough hours to become what I believe to be financially free.
But what's the number? Like, what would be the number that you need to bring in if you say, I don't think I could work enough to bring in that number?
I don't know, because I saw you knock down Tony's quarter of a million.
Well, no, I didn't mean to knock it down. I didn't mean to knock it down.
I recognize that, because I have people who I train that make, you know, that kind of money, and they're not rich. They're not financially free.
Well, no, but here, I want you to understand, I didn't knock it down. What I did was I separated it from the concept of financial security. In other words, $250,000 is a good income, right? If you go, I want $250,000, that's a good income. But what I'm saying is, unless you live a very conservative life and you don't up your game, it's not financial freedom. It can go in a minute.
Correct.
So financial stability has to be more than just a $250,000. It doesn't mean a higher income, but it might mean investments. It might mean securities, and it might mean owning homes. Okay, so that I didn't mean to push down the number. There's nothing wrong with the number. Just the assumption that that makes you financially secure, in many cases, may just be a flawed assumption.
Yeah, and I think that's why I don't have a number, because I don't think that it is just based on a number that I make each month, because I have to keep that up. So that, to me, that's not free. It does. It depends on other things, you know, other people bringing money for me, or, you know, like you said, an investment somewhere that pays off, or, you know, something.
So you want to work side by side with doctors, and you want to have people working for you.
I've had a couple people do blood work on their own recently, and both doctors came back. One said on the labs themselves, it said labs are perfect. The second one, their doctor said, whatever you're doing, just keep doing it. And both these guys are in my fold and just get it. So, you know, that's just confirmation that what we do is different. Not that I need to confirm, but so when Velma and I were talking, what really came out of me was a bit of frustration and anger that that I'm not paid what I'm worth, and that people like this super rich dude tell me I'm at the high end. Like, I feel like saying, fuck you, man. Like, look what you charge. And he's a lawyer that defends sexual assault cases on campuses. Like, that's why he's killing it right now, because that's everywhere. So, I mean, he basically goes into the school, you know, and says the school did nothing wrong, and here's what happened, and, you know, who's at fault here? Okay, that's all done. And he made crazy money. And what we do is, in my opinion, more important and more valuable. So I think it's a frustration that other people don't see my value, that I'm labeled as a personal trainer, and I feel like I'm stuck in that, and I'm not closely enough aligned with doctors in the medical world or whatever it might be to say, hey, this is the guy that you guys need to go see. Like, that's what I want. I want doctors in my area to point their clients to me and say, this guy has the answer right here. Go talk to him. That's what I want.
All right. Jim, I understand it's impassioned. What you're saying is true. I believe you need a little more specificity. But let me ask, Taco. You can tell I'm hungry.
You hungry?
Yeah. Taco, can you and Guacamole speak to Jim? Taco, can you, is there anything that he said that makes you want to kind of respond about his idea of working side by side with doctors?
Well, I don't know what limits I'm doing it now, based on the experience we've had. I mean, it's sort of like just doing it, because, you know, I think that he already has everything he needs in the toolkit to do it. He just needs to put himself out there and you know, take a big deep breath and go do it.
Do you find that you are, at least you feel as if you are perceived now as an equal to these guys? No, I'm asking Tasso, because he's working with a lot of doctors. That's why I'm curious.
I actually find, I would say with 75% of them, that I've become a mentor for them. Because I'm on the same page as they are, but I'm, because of what we've done in this group, I'm sort of articulating what they're looking for, you know. I called you that night after I had those seven docs that I talked to, and I told you about the opportunity of being invited into their group and stuff, and I just feel like we've been prepared. We're ready. It's just sort of like you got to get the balls to go do it. Sorry, Velma. You know, you got to start with one. You really got to start with one, and you've got one. You got guys that you said, look, this is what I've done. Who else? You know, it's like the night I told you a year and a half ago when I spoke, and there were two doctors in the back of the room, and they went back to sit down and talk to each other. They hadn't seen each other in a long time. And all of a sudden, the one doctor, when I started talking about a triangle, slaps the other doctor, goes, points at the screen, and he came up to me and he said, I've never heard a personal trainer talk like you. And I said, I'm not a personal trainer. I said, I'm a healer. I'm a person who makes people change their lives. And I would turn around to that attorney and say, I mean, I have the balls to do this now. I would turn around and go, I'm worth it. That's why I'm so much better than them. I said, can you really compare me to that guy that's at Gold's Gym that got a certification, you know, from AFA? I got 30 years experience.
So do we really need doctors, though? And I'm not trying to say that.
No.
Like, do we really?
No.
Okay.
Let me clarify something then. Let me clarify something because I think my wording was off. I don't want to work side by side. I don't want that. I want them to look at me as the guy that knows something, that gets to operate outside the box, that's correct. And so that those doctors talk to their patients and go, you want to make a change? Go to him. That's what I want. I don't want to be side by side with them. I don't want to, you know, that's what I'm looking for. I want them
All right.
to point their people to me because they know that I know.
So, Jim, you know the day that doctors just came to me and said, we want you to speak in front of our audience? You know that day? That
No.
day never happened. There was no such thing.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, I don't remember you talking about that.
Right. So, but what you have to understand is I made that happen. I made it happen. And I started by making a fool of myself. And I started by speaking at any event I could. And then I created my own event. And I created a luncheon at Johns Hopkins. I don't know if I told you this. I invited 102 doctors. I got a list. I bought a list. Invited 102 doctors. We got a restaurant near Johns Hopkins in Baltimore. 12 of them showed up. That's how I started. And none of them had any interest in what I had to say. But I got better at it, and I stayed with it. And I started going to local offices, and I started going to endocrinologists and saying, send me people. Send me your people for 8 weeks. Send me your cases of people with type 2 diabetes who will not do anything. Send them. Send them to me. And they started to, and that's when I started to get results. So if I look back over the process, it never happened that they came to me. It happened that I initiated it. Today, they send me people. Today, they bring people to my seminars. You know, today I have doctors going through Might Be Better. But I want you to understand, it's never because one day they said, hey, we'd like you to speak at our event. You know, it was just me kind of putting my head down and going forward. And that's the point that I think you're at. And I think what Tasso said, it's inevitable that's what happens is you become a mentor because they don't know what you know. And for so long, you guys were under the assumption that when we're talking about things like CRP, you're going, well, doctors know that. They don't fucking know it. That's what's going to flip you out when you get there is they don't know this stuff. You know, go ahead.
I actually see a little bit of that already. I trained a guy who's an orthopedic doctor, and he came to me because he told me, he goes, I understand structure. I don't understand the function, like how it all plays together. So he sees it. And he's seen what I've done to him. I trained his kids. I trained, like, he sees it. So do I start with him and say, yo, get me in front of all your doctors in your building for a lunch talk?
No.
Like,
no, because that's a big task. Like, he's not a guy who assembles his doctors. Like, he has no reason to do that. But you go to him and you go, send me the parents. I know that you see a kid whose parents come in and they're obese. Send me the parents. Let's just see what I could do with them. Like, that's where you start, because that's how you win the respect, is if he's a pediatrician, you know that some of those parents are walking in visibly overweight. You know that there are some kids who come in with blood sugar issues, and he did a history, but the parents have it too, right? So if you have that relationship, that's where you start. Send me those people. Let's see what I could do with those people over the course of 12 weeks. And then suddenly you kind of raise an eyebrow, and he goes, whoa, And that's when you say, do you know an endocrinologist? Great. And then he tells the endocrinologist, I know this trainer who amazingly had these parents who had type 2 diabetes and they don't have it anymore. That's sort of the contagious thing that will happen. But what you have to, that's what I mean is you got to channel the anger. Like you got to go, okay, I'm sick and tired of this shit. But it's not like miraculously doctors will start sending me people. So I can get mad at them or I could use this anger to start to create a little bit of momentum. And I love what Tasso said because it's what I told you guys. I would say to you guys, I'm standing on a platform speaking to doctors. Years ago, I thought I wanted the doctors to refer people to me. Today, I'm teaching the doctors. So I know it was hard for you to hear that for a period of time because you didn't think you could do it. But now I think Tasso's starting to see it. Yeah, these guys don't know this stuff. I want to tell you one breakthrough lesson that I learned that really gave me leverage with the doctors, one major breakthrough lesson, is when doctors prescribe metformin, which is the most highly prescribed drug for type 2 diabetes or for elevated blood sugar, metformin. So with every drug, there's a protocol. You can't just randomly prescribe a drug. And there's what they call on-label use and off-label use. And if ever they prescribe something for off-label use, they run the risk of having to answer to the board. So they're usually very careful. They stay within the protocol, right? So the protocol for prescribing metformin is somebody has to have elevated blood glucose on a lab test. And then you send them for a fasting test. And if their blood glucose is elevated, and there are different numbers, but above 104, you could then prescribe metformin. Okay, so you got that? It's really simple. Someone comes in, we do their basic metabolic panel, their blood glucose is high. We go, you know what? Looks a little high, we're going to send you for a fasting test. They go for a fasting test, it comes back 112. They go, oh, yep, you got type 2 diabetes, we're going to put you on metformin. It's that simple. Okay, that's the protocol. So as I was learning more and more about this, I started to look at what if the person has high insulin? Isn't it different than if the person has low insulin? I just started to kind of realize this as I'm, you know, learning. Because if somebody has high insulin, it means the pancreas is working. In fact, it's overworking. But they still have high blood sugar. So what that means is this is a condition of insulin resistance. This isn't diabetes. This is insulin resistance. Do you understand that, Jim?
Yep.
If the person has low insulin, that's a broken pancreas or a crippled pancreas because it's not making insulin. So they're two opposite conditions. Yet, they're not looking at insulin. So for me, that was what I was now able to stand on stage in front of doctors and say, let me show you what's wrong with your testing, and their jaws dropped because why didn't they think of it? I mean, it is so obvious when you put it in front of them, right? But the paradigm, and that led me to say, so here's where we're at. You guys are following the protocols laid out by the drug companies, even though at times they don't make sense. So it was just that little realization on my part that brought me to a place where I wasn't a personal trainer talking to them anymore. I was suddenly a guy with insight. And then down the road when I had data to show how we can reverse, and the CRP became a huge topic of discussion when I broke out the studies of cholesterol. So they never saw this before. So you get what I'm saying, that I'm not looking to work side by side with them. I'm just looking to say, guys, you're not doing the job. You're the leak detection expert who's coming to a house and shrugging his shoulders. People are coming to you to get well, and you're giving them a drug, but you're not getting them well. I'm getting them well. So I want you to understand, as I said to you earlier, I'm holding back nothing. You're the same, Jim. You're the same. You could do the same thing. So forget about sitting being angry. I want you to stay angry, but I want you to use it. So that's the one thing I would ask you to do is if you know this doctor well, who's a pediatrician.
No, he's an orthopedic.
Oh, an orthopedic. I don't know why I thought you said he's a pediatrician. Okay.
Yeah. He actually does a lot of TENS unit implantations on the spine. That's kind of neat, isn't it?
It is, but that's not the market you want to go after.
No, agree. He's a part of Premier Orthopedics. It's a big orthopedic group, big. So.
And is this a somebody you can sit down to lunch with?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Here's how I'd open up a dialogue. I mean, you know, friendly conversation. I go, I'm just curious. With all of the orthopedic stuff you see, I'm sure some of them are sports injuries. Some of them are, you know, weekend warrior stuff. Some of them are, you know, seniors who get a little brittle. But how many of them are really lifestyle related?
Yeah.
In other words, how many people just don't take care of themselves and as a result, you know, things start to break down, muscular imbalances. They're carrying too much weight, you know, poor posture. And I would do the same thing. I would go, I would challenge you to send me some of those people who are simply not taking care of themselves. I'd like to put them through a 12-week program. You know, of course, after they heal from their injury, after the contraindications are gone and they can come work out. I would love for you to just say to a couple of them, go see this guy, Jim. He's going to make sure that you really gain control of your body. And that's not going to change anything. It's just a starting point.
Yeah.
It's going to give you a different level of confidence. It's going to start doctors sending people to you. But then I think the next step is, as I said, you go to him and you go, who do you know who's an endocrinologist? Because I really want to challenge myself with the people who have thyroid issues. You know, I'm seeing amazing change in some people. I want to see what I could do with them. But you gotta have the will. You got to be bold enough to cross that bridge. And then the other piece of it, because you did say there's a financial piece, is you got to be willing to charge appropriately. So a doctor sends somebody to you, and they're going to go, how much do you charge? And if you say $125 an hour, then realize that's what you're locked into. That's what they will see you as.
Yeah.
Does that make sense, at least in terms of direction?
Yeah for sure. Yep.
So I think the milestone here is get two clients referred to you by a doctor because you asked for them. Don't just wait for it to happen. But say, look, doc, who of your patients right now, like, is pretty close to healing, but they have an injury because of just lifestyle? You know, they were overweight.
Yeah.
They tried to do something they weren't conditioned enough to do.
Yeah.
You know, New Year's coming
yeah,
up. Do you know how many people are going to have ankle and knee injuries because they start running? Seriously.
Yeah, right.
True.
So I just think find that in you and use that anger as fuel. You know, I mean, you could let him see that you're angry. Not at doctors, but just,
right.
Man, it just drives me crazy how people don't understand that they can be in control of their body. You know, I want to help them. So tell me a couple of patients that you have, you know, who are just, you look at them and you go, oh, this didn't have to happen. If only they were more fit. You know, if only they weighed 20 pounds less.
Yep.
Good. I like that for you. I think if you do it, it's going to start a big change.
Right on.
And really start
Great.
To think on a daily basis of charging in line with what you
yeah.
deserve. Really get comfortable with a number. Because
right.
I think, Jim, when you get comfortable with a number, then you can create enough of a distinction so you are the premium. So, in other words, that's when you have other people, just like you had in your corporate center. You know, you're not there every day, but you're making money from it, right?
Right.
So when you're the premium, when you're charging $600 for a working hour, it's not that you're arrogant, but you have guys who will train people for $100 an hour, and that those are the people under you who are generating money for you.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I get it. It's funny, too, because as I think about that, in the very beginning when I got this corporate thing and I had one guy working with me for, he probably worked with me for 12 years, I felt like he was my equal because trainer to trainer, he was. He was really good and he saw things and we talked about x-ray vision and not, you know, stuff like this, right? And the two guys that work for me now, the one guy especially has been coming to my, like, group class that I teach because every time he comes, he picks something up. And I've been watching him, and he's a likable guy, good-looking guy, nice, good trainer, but he doesn't get it. So there is a very big distinction between what he should charge and what I should charge.
Yes.
So I do see that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I do
yes.
see that.
You are the outlier. All right, good. Thank you, Jim, for being vulnerable.
Thanks. Yeah, thank you.
All right, we got time for one more. Who wants it? We'll continue this on the next call, but who wants to step in? Jason? Has Jason left us? Tammy? Tasso?
Is Tammy here? Tasso?
Oh, Taco? Shit, we ain't got enough time for me, Phil.
You want to wait till next time? We can do that. No, honestly, if you want it, we can wait. We can kick off the next call with it.
Yeah, because I have a client coming.
All right. You sound a little tired, stressed.
Oh, no, I'm not. It's just I made a lot of notes during this, and I kick back and go, son of a bitch. It's sort of like the reflex of, why don't you believe? Why don't you believe? Why don't you believe? Why don't you believe? I'll be very candid with you, Phil. I mean, when I grow up, I want to be Phil, but I'm already fucking 20 years older than you, so I'm like going, oh, shit, where did I waste my life at? Because I know I'm good at what I do, you know, kind of deal. And this, what we do is switch the light on me for so much and allow me to use my formal training to really, you know, do this. You know, it's like, but I'm going to have to live till I'm 85 to do the things I want to do, and that's, there's nothing wrong, and not live to 85, work to 85, you know, it's like, so I understand that I feel like I said in that one part of my thing, I'm right there. Why aren't I hungry enough to just pull it in the rest of the way? You know,
is that what you think it is? You're not hungry enough?
I almost do think it. I don't know if it's hungry enough or if it's brash enough. You know, remember a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, we had that conversation on the call about that balance between arrogance and competence. And
yeah.
And I almost think there's sometimes I've had to push the arrogance.
It was arrogance and humility on opposite ends of the spectrum, right?
And
confidence is right in the middle. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I've had to push the arrogance part a little bit. So I'll have the confidence to not melt when the other night when I spoke, and this one doctor from Orlando as part of their group goes, well, I got a couple questions for you. I said, fire away, brother. You know, before I would have gone, oh, fuck, he's going to ask me a question. I'm going to fucking, you know, shit my britches right in front of everybody, you know. But it was, you know, it's sort of like, I'm ready, just bring it. I've been doing this for a year now. I know what I'm going to answer, you know, kind of thing. I've narrowed my message. I've studied.
Let me tell you this, Tasso. This is just a mantra, okay, that I use. Questions are good.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question that will not be good. Even if you don't know the answer, the question is good. Because it never happens that somebody throws a question at me that trips me up or knocks me down or makes everybody laugh at me. It's never happened. So why do we have that irrational fear? The worst case is you don't know the answer and you go, it's a really good question. I don't know. Honestly, that's like the worst thing that could happen. So good. I mean, the fact that you're in that mode where you're going, good, bring it on, that's great. I think for you, a part of your eternal struggle has been being in that same bodies club with the remnants and shadows of 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I really think you getting in a brand new space would change a whole lot. And I could be wrong, because honestly, I've never been to your club. But I do see how over the years, it always comes back to this discussion of used to. And it's like you're not going to create a used to anymore because it's not going to be 1980 again. So freeing yourself of it, kind of cutting that cord completely, may give you the hunger and the passion and the excitement to really create something brand new.
Yeah. What's interesting, Phil, is, you know, we're 20 days away from D-Day. They either got to put up the other $100,000, or $700,000, make it $100,000 for the deal to be hard cash, or they're going to walk away. And there's a very real possibility now that the deal doesn't go through. The interesting thing about the exercise I've gone through to design the smaller club is I've also mentally designed the alternative to this club within these same four walls. Almost.
Okay.
Mark Davis and I have gone through a big discussion of what would I rename my club? and the name we came up, although it's, we're stealing, is one of two: Discover Hell or Good Life. You know, but Good Life we're stealing from Patch, but it's not branded in the state of Florida, so we're good. So, you know, it's got copyright in the state of Florida. So it's almost that, that it's going to describe where we're going. And it's a completely different model. You know, so it's made me think outside that box to say, you know, I have guys that, that want to do the old paradigm that worked for me. And I brought the two of them in. I said, listen, let me tell you something. I said, it's not that you guys aren't good trainers. It's that you guys don't get the direction I'm going because you're stuck in this paradigm because you're 29 and 30 years old. So I want to tell you this. See this room right here? I have a vision for it. Outside that, that door right there, that's going to be your club. You're going to run it. You have enough capital to run it. You guys can run it with your heart and soul like you want to. Me, I'm taking this guy that gets it, and we're going to be in here. And you're going to allow us the freedom to do that so we can do more for you in that area. It's how I've had to deal with the aspect, the possibility of the deal not going through. So that's, I'm comfortable with whatever happens. I'm comfortable and confident with whatever happens, and I have no problem investigating what the name of this club will be and what the brand of it will be as I go forward.
So you are really, you're agreeing that there's a part of you needing to put the past in the past?
Absolutely.
And you're willing to do that now with no barriers at this point?
Yes. No worries about it. No worry about the paradigm shift, because I understand if I stay in that past, if I try and recreate the past, Phil, all I'm doing is continuing to compete with the Gold and the Y and the Planet Fitnesses. And in my group interview now, where I like about the third or fourth slide, I have in there that we're not in the paradigm of a personal trainer. And I used something from one of the presentations that we talked, one of the calls we had. I said, we are healers. We are agents of change here. So that aspect, that whole discussion that came out of Health Catalyst and that type of stuff.
Good.
Has driven that to where I understand that I'm sort of like, I look at myself and I say, okay, I'm the wise-ass old sage that's seen the vision beforehand. And there's almost like, why would I want to hire a personal trainer to come work for me when they don't get it? And the difference between all of us on this call is that we'll go and invest in ourselves to learn and not say we've got all the answers. Whereas the majority of the trainers that are out there think they have the answers, think they're great, and think that the biggest credential that they bring to the table is their bodybuilding titles, you know, and I think that's a shift that we all have to take and understand who we are and what we've invested in ourselves.
Good. All right. So, Tasha, we'll pick up with you on the next call, and then Patrick, I didn't forget about you. I have something very specific for you, so but we'll get to it on the next call. I know Tasha has a client. I hope this didn't hurt everybody's brain too much. I hope it was well received. So Velma and Tony, just send a little email to the group tomorrow, either rejecting my suggestion or accepting it. Jim, give some careful thought to what we spoke about, because I think there's a path for you, and I think rather than letting the anger stew, just use it. I mean, you're in a position to really launch something great. And April, I'm really excited for what the future holds for you, because I think this is a breakthrough. I do. I think kind of making peace with I'm not a personal trainer anymore, but I am something different will lead you to that cabin in the woods. So until we speak again, everybody, be better.
Have a great day.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks.